Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
That war rocket Ajax to bring back his body.
Everybody, and welcome to War Rocket Ajax. This is the internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast, and we are your hosts. My name is Chris Sims. With me, as always, is Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, how you doing?
I am recovering from our road trip last week. It knocked me out a little bit, Chris, I have to say. I got a little sick when we got back, but I am on the mend.
It was a long couple days.
We did a lot. We recorded a lot. And if I'm a little.
It was about 2 months ago.
Yeah. If I'm a little froggy in the voice, that is why. Just so everybody knows.
What if you're froggy and fresh in the voice?
Man, RIP Froggy Fresh. He retired.
I'm sorry. Did something happen?
He's not dead. He just retired.
Oh, okay. Matt, don't scare me like that. You know I got the anxiety.
I mean, I guess the gimmick of Froggy Fresh has been laid to rest, and now he's just whatever his real name is. I feel like we talked about this really recently.
We might have. It's, folks, it's been a bit.
It's been a bit. Even with that in mind, we have an amazing show for everybody this week, because we have, for the first time in like 5 years, our pal Derek Charm here on the show to talk about all the great work he's been doing on Squirrel Girl, on Jughead, on Star Wars Adventures, on Valiant High. This has been quite a year for Derek Charm, and we're going to talk to him about all that stuff.
It's going to be good. It's going to be great. I'm going to have fun, and I hope our listeners are also going to have fun. But Matt, before we get into that, I think we've got some other stuff to take care of here on the show.
Absolutely we do, Chris, and we're going to start with thanking our newest supporters on Patreon.
That's right, Matt. These are the people. They took a road trip themselves. They got in the car. They put on some good tunes. They stopped off at Sheetz and got some cupcakes. And they went down to 403 Gimmick Street. And they said, hey, I'm going to go to patreon.com/WarRocketAjax and give those War Rocket Ajax boys just as little as a dollar a month, because I want to support the show and help them do stuff like 2-hour Every Story Ever specials every month. I want to get them up to that level where they will finally do the long-rumored podcast Neighborhood Watch, where they watch Gotham, which I want to do, which I don't think you want to do.
I do not, and it's going to be a while before we get there, but we'll see.
It's going to be quite a bit, but that will be an entire parallel podcast that we will be doing eventually. I want to get some bonus content, including about 5 hours of stuff that we recorded on the road.
You can get it by helping us out on Patreon.
So Matt, tell me what they got to do.
You could do what the people I'm about to name have done. And go to patreon.com/warrocketajax and pledge a little money. First up, we have GS.
Thank you, GS.
We also have Dan Spaceman.
Oh, thank you, Dan Spaceman.
How about Rando Dixon?
Rando Dixon, thank you.
And very, very close friend of the show, the purveyor of the Intuit Podcast Network, L. Collins.
The best. The absolute best.
The absolute best has pledged. Thank you to them. If you would like us to call you the best, we may just do it if you head over to patreon.com/warrocketajax and kick in as little as a dollar a month. Chris just listed off a bunch of stuff you would get for the show, you would get from the show if you pledged. Also, if you're at the absolute highest pledge level that we currently have, you could get a t-shirt. Vaporblade t-shirts are arriving at my house. I got the shipping notification today. They're arriving at my house days from now. and they will be sent out to those patrons. You could be on board for the hottest product hitting the market soon.
I would say the hottest product in the history of products.
Top product, baby.
Number one product. Number one product all time. So thank you to them. And now let's get into some other stuff. Let's do some checks and wrecks. We haven't done that in a while. So come on and tickety-tack
yourself before you wreck yourself. All right, Chris, what are you checking in with this week?
Well, I got to Negan. So I know about Negan now.
Now, for anybody who isn't into our bonus content, they may not know that you have been watching The Walking Dead from the start.
From the start. In the span of about a month, I've watched 6.5 seasons of The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Which is a lot. It's a lot of Walking Dead.
Now, we did about 30-some minutes of bonus content about The Walking Dead up to now. Up to what you had already watched by that point. But now you're in Negan land.
Yeah, man. I found out all about him. That's all I've been doing. We got back from that road trip. I immediately got back to work, and it's just been me writing things and watching that not very good television show.
It's just miserable.
It is. There's something else that happens at the start of old season 7. It lost me and it got me back the way it always does, in the same way that we talk about on that bonus content. So if people want to hear about that.
I remember when like Negan did his famous bat death thing. People all over were like, I'm never watching the show again. It lost me forever. And then they were watching it in the famous words of Captain Mustache. Dad don't want it.
All right, here's the deal. Here's my specific deal, Matt. We talked about this at length, where it's not a show that I like, I guess, is the best way to put that. But it is a show that I keep watching because it is good, very good background noise for me. The thing is this, Matt, the season opener for season 7 happens, which is the extremely, like, miserable episode where Negan beats some people to death with a baseball bat, which yeah. It takes about 40 minutes. It does go on, you know?
Yeah.
I was ready to give up. Like, I was like, oh, okay, if this is what the show is now, if this is what Negan's all about, like, I'm not even going to wait for Chambers to show up. I'm just going to, like, quit. But I was almost done writing the thing I was writing. And I didn't want to, like, find something new to put on for background noise and do something else. So I left it playing while I finished up the thing I was working on. And then the next thing that happened was they introduced another new character named King Ezekiel, and he owns a tiger. And leads a bunch of Renfair people who dress as knights and have horses. And again, he is a man who owns a tiger.
I can't believe they keep getting you like that.
They do. It's like they calculate it to be like, oh, this, you know, we're going to do something that's going to alienate a lot of viewers. But then if we give them this cool dude who owns a tiger and talks like Thor as written by Stan Lee, then they'll be back. They're going to come right back.
Also, I mean,
you got to know what happens.
Well, you got to wait till Chambers shows up, too.
And I gotta wait till Chambers to show up. I'm hoping he shows up by like season 8.
Yeah, hopefully.
I think he's in season 8.5, actually.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. That's what I got. That's all I got. Matt, what about you?
I have 3 check-in items that I need to get through really fast.
I think this is unprecedented.
It's a check-in list. First, I'm gonna clear the air. Time for air clearing.
Okay.
Air clearing.
It's the air clearing air horn.
I can't believe the Mad Decent app doesn't work anymore, so I can't actually use it. First off, I saw some people saying after I put up the live episode from Columbus that the crowd was bad. I want to make more than clear, the crowd at the Columbus show was great.
Yeah, the crowd was great. They were really responsive. They were really hot.
They were laughing. They were applauding. You couldn't really hear them on the recording because the audience wasn't mic'd. So if you weren't hearing audience reactions or you thought that they sounded muted, that's why. And so I don't want anybody thinking like, oh, that crowd sucked. Matt and Chris were on fire. Why weren't they laughing more? They were. I mean, look, they were laughing.
We were on fire.
I mean, two things or three things? What? I mean, a bit for the ages.
What a classic bit. What an all-new, all-different classic bit.
My favorite comedy duo of all time, Yanni and Hardy, would never like have done anything so great. So that's the first thing I want to say. The crowd at Columbus was great, and it just sounded a little weird maybe on the recording. Second, I think I've mentioned this already. I will definitely mention it next week also, but I want to mention it again. Everything Will Be Okay, number one, if you did not back it on Kickstarter, is going to be available on Comixology May 30th. That is the day. I talked with friend of the show, Tim Stevens, who has written for Marvel.com and some other places. I specifically spoke to him for Comicsverse for a wide-ranging interview about Everything Will Be Okay, Copernicus Jones, all of the podcasts I do, including this one, and Movie Fighters, and Snack Situation. All that is talked about in part two of the podcast. Part one of the podcast is about all three of the King Oblivion books and sort of how the book has closed, for lack of a better cliche, on those, and we're sort of putting them to bed. It's a really great two-part interview on Comicsverse that you can go read, but it is in advance of Everything Will Be Okay coming out on May 30th. So check out those interviews, or that one long interview split into two parts, and Everything Will Be Okay in just over a week. I think you can pre-order it this Wednesday. So jump on that, maybe. One last thing. Chris, you were talking about going on a trip soon. I am going on a trip soon. Well, not until September. But I wanted to mention it now to see if people listening wanted to like hit me up with some suggestions and tips. I booked a trip with Marlene to go to Los Angeles, California in September. We got an Airbnb in the Hollywood Hills.
Ooh.
Which was shockingly cheap, but has very good ratings, so I feel pretty good about it. We're going to rent a car and drive around everywhere. It's right next to Universal Studios, so I think we're probably going to do Universal Studios. And I've got a list of like other stuff we could do in LA. We're definitely going to go see a lot of improv. We're definitely going to go on a studio tour. We're probably going to go see like a live taping of Conan or something. But if anybody listening to this, one, is in the LA area and just wants to like say hi, maybe we could arrange that. Or if you just have suggestions of cool stuff to do in LA that maybe the regular tourists wouldn't know about, let me know about it. I'm open to ideas and suggestions for cool stuff to do in LA, which I've never been to before. So those are all my checks, Chris.
Pretty exciting to go to Los Angeles.
Yeah, I'm not going for like any businessy reason. It's a pure vacation, but I think it's going to be a lot of fun. All right, Chris, what do you have to recommend this week?
My recommendation, I'm getting ready to go to Charleston in celebration of my first wedding anniversary. And my recommendation is getting married, because being married for a year has been fantastic. It's been great to be with someone that I love as much as I love Aiden. So my recommendation is that you find someone that you want to spend your life with and then spend your life with them.
All right. I'm just making a note here, Chris.
That's all I got
for myself for when I do. I'm making a note here for when I do the show notes. Amazon link for marriage. Got it.
I think my registry's still up. Holla at your boy. We need a food processor. Actually, I think we have a food processor. Matt, what's your recommendation this week?
My recommendation is something that is less of a deep life choice than marriage, but that does have some interesting things to say about relationships. Did I do it?
Did you do a choice segue?
Yeah.
Yes, we did.
It is the Janelle Monáe album and movie Dirty Computer, which is so good. I would invite everybody listening to this, if you haven't seen it yet, to go on YouTube and just watch the full like hour-long movie that's up, which is, I mean, it's basically just a collection of music videos with, you know, interstitial scenes between the videos to pull them together into a narrative. But it's very good. I really like the way the story comes together. It is like a weird, funky sci-fi story, which is exactly what you would expect from Janelle Monáe. It's got really, really great songs in it, obviously, with Tessa Thompson in every video also. So good acting, good chemistry between Janelle Monáe and Tessa Thompson. And it's very good. But also, the full album is a banger from start to finish. Just super, super good stuff. I've been saying for years, why isn't Janelle Monáe the most popular musician in the world? It made no sense to me why she was not like top of the charts every time she put something out. And it is really cool to see her finally getting the attention I think she has deserved for a long, long time. Like, maybe now she can be in the Super Bowl halftime show instead of the Pepsi commercial before the Super Bowl halftime show. Because she's fucking great.
I am very excited about this album. I have not listened to it yet, and I think maybe watching the movie might be one of my anniversary weekend activities. But Aiden and I have tickets to see Janelle Monáe in Raleigh this fall, and that is extremely exciting.
Yeah, I am actually a little jealous that you have those tickets. Maybe she's coming somewhere around here, I'll try to get tickets to a show, because I would love to go see Janelle Monáe live. Because, like I said, that album is so good from front to back. No duds on that album. All right, Chris, those are our checks and recs. Let's talk about some of the comics of the week.
Let's do it.
Let's start with Justice League No Justice. Number 2 came out this week. Number 1 was last week. I think I kind of want to talk about both.
Okay.
It is a really wild take on the Justice League that is building us up to what is going to be the sort of new status quo for the Justice League when the full-on Scott Snyder Justice League run starts. Mm-hmm. This is a huge cosmic story coming out of DC Knights Metal, not only by Scott Snyder, but also by Joshua Williamson and James Tynion in the IV, with art by Francis Manapul, who nails this shit. Francis Manapul is doing like career work on the art in this book. It's so good. Even though I do have to say, some of the new costumes that have the Brainiac shit on them do look a little bit like pajamas. I'm talking about you, Martian Manhunter.
The Martian Manhunter one is the one that I have heard the most people talking about, and I'm kind of like, yeah, I get it.
It looks like pajamas.
Has the Martian Manhunter, like, look, I like the classic look. I like the classic blue trunks, red bondage harness, cape, corsair boots look. I like it. I like it a lot. But, like, I feel like the Martian Manhunter has maybe not had a great costume ever, maybe.
That's a tough one.
Yeah, it's a weird one.
Anyway, the idea of this story is Brainiac comes to Earth and is not attacking Earth, but is instead pulling together the Justice League, the Suicide Squad, the Teen Titans, and a group of assorted supervillains, including Lex Luthor and Starro, and fucking Sinestro and saying, I'm pulling you all together because we have to join up and defeat a cosmic threat that is going to destroy my planet of Kolu. And then after it destroys Kolu, it's going to destroy Earth. It feels like the DC version of not only the Celestials, because it's these four massive godlike beings that embody universal energies, mystery, wonder, wisdom, and entropy. But also they devour planets. So they're showing up to devour Kolu. Mm-hmm. And Brainiac's like, I'm putting you together in teams divided by those four energies to fight these essentially Celestials to stop them from eating Kolu so that they then won't eat Earth. And through a wild series of events, Brainiac goes down. Brainiac gets taken out by the end of issue one. It also involves Amanda Waller, who's still back on Earth. And so Brainiac's given out all the orders at the beginning of this, and then he's gone. And so issue two is just all the heroes like trying to figure out what they are supposed to do. Even though Brainiac spends so much of the first issue saying, like, if you don't do everything exactly as I say, it's not going to work. We are not going to do this. So you have to listen to me. But he's not there in issue two. And they're just like kind of like fumbling around in the dark, trying to figure out how to defeat these celestial creature things. There's a lot in issue two in particular of just like these weird groupings of heroes and anti-heroes and villains trying to figure out the way to do things and like kind of debate morality in the midst of a cosmic crisis that isn't necessarily the way I always think of the Justice League reading. It kind of reads more like I think of the Avengers reading, where you have these like moral conflicts in the midst of, or like not moral conflicts, but maybe philosophical conflicts in the midst of these big crises.
Yeah.
But it's a really interesting take on a Justice League where these teams are thrown together, not by choice. Brainiac put them together. And also, you've got the breakout star of the book, Starro. who's like doing that Scott Snyder shit where he's like a snarky motherfucker who's saying like funny stuff.
Yeah, you talking about Dirtbag Starro?
Yeah, I love Dirtbag Starro.
Yeah, Dirtbag Starro is extremely great.
I'm enjoying this series very, very much so far. It's halfway done. I kind of don't know based on the ending of issue two, how the whole story is going to fit into just four issues. I mean, it could be one of those things where it just rolls into Justice League number one when that happens.
I feel like that's pretty likely. Like, I feel like there's going to be a lot of setup probably for the way the Justice League's going to go. But yeah, like I think what the Justice League has lacked for a long time, the thing that we had such a problem with when we were, you know, reading the John's run, is they've lacked like villains to fight or like evil forces to fight and kind of a clear mission statement beyond, you know, we are popular superheroes hanging out together. And I feel like that's what a story like this is going to give them, right? Like they're going to have been put together for this specific purpose, and they're dealing with weird cosmic Grant Morrison stuff in the same way that like Metal was all about weird cosmic turn the map of the multiverse upside down stuff.
Yeah. Well, it's also interesting how this dovetails off of Metal, because it's all based on the Justice League having broken the source wall back in Metal.
Yep.
So, like, everything builds on the last thing, which is so great.
Yeah. And Metal, like, the thing that we love the most about Metal at the start of it was that it was all that DC Comics bullshit.
Yeah, definitely.
That we love the mantling, Matt. The mantling might be my favorite thing that's happened in DC Comics in a while.
I love the mantling. Good God. Yeah, well, Justice League No Justice is a worthy successor to Metal. Absolutely. I'm getting a kick out of it. Chris, let's talk next about Usagi Yojimbo, The Hidden, number 3.
Yeah, guess what? It's great.
Big shock, everybody.
Yeah, it's awesome. If you're not reading Usagi Yojimbo, The Hidden, it's... I don't know if they're just going to be doing like Usagi Yojimbo miniseries now, instead of doing like arcs within the ongoing series. But that seems to be what this one is. This one is just, you know, the next Usagi Yojimbo story. It even has footnotes telling you where to go for the last time that we've seen some of these characters. And also telling you that Ronin meets Masterless Samurai. Don't know if you've caught that over the years. The plot of this one kind of goes back to a specific issue of Usagi Yojimbo where we see people like smuggling in a Bible. Because it takes place during a time when Christianity was outlawed in Japan after there had been some conversions among the Japanese populace. And so the whole thing is a murder mystery about these samurai who were working for this lord who imports things, who may or may not be a Christian, because they find a cross on one of the guys. And it's always spelled Kurishitan when Usagi says it. And it's an Inspector Ishida story. And as you may remember, Inspector Ishida is based on Columbo. And that's great. But I think one of the best things about it is that we actually get a just one more thing moment in this one, which was very good. It's an actual, just one more thing. We think the guy, you know, your samurai who got murdered was a Christian, and the guy like flips out on him and is like, how dare you? How dare you say that about me in my own house? It's really, really solid. Again, totally unsurprising. Really, really solid stuff from Usagi Yojimbo. And it's the masterful thing about it. It's super easy to jump on. If you have not ever read Usagi Yojimbo before, I feel like you can just pick this one up and you'll be fine. So do so, because it's good. It's great.
One last comic that we're going to talk about this week is Batman number 47. The last part of an absolutely bananas story that admittedly is clearly just in here to delay and postpone the wedding issue until probably number 50. That's what the wedding issue is going to be, right?
Yeah. That's when they have weddings.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if I had been ready to get married, but it was only like Chris number 23? I would have been so upset.
You at least got to get to 25.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, Batman number 50 is going to be the wedding. I knew it. I forgot what number it was in the solicitations. It is 50. So this was a way to get 3 issues done on the way to 50, but it's so wild that it's worth it. It's a 3-issue story in which Booster Gold gets Batman and Catwoman a wedding gift that is him stopping the death of Bruce Wayne's parents. And in doing so, he makes Batman the Punisher?
Mm-hmm.
So in this issue, he has to go back and stop himself from stopping the death of Bruce Wayne's parents. What a wild time we live in, Chris.
It's wonderful. Like, the first couple parts of the story, the first part of the story is one of my favorite things Tom King has written, because it's Booster Gold literally talking about For the Man Who Has Everything, like the Superman story. And he's like, yeah, remember Superman saw what would happen if Krypton hadn't exploded? It sucked. And that made him appreciate his life a lot more. So I'm going to do the same for you, Batman. Which is the one, I think, legitimate complaint you can make about this issue is that Booster Gold's dumb, but he's not that dumb usually. But man, Man, it's good.
Also, certainly of note is that this issue is drawn by Tony Daniel, who we have not always had nice things to say about on this show, talking about his art in stuff like Batman R.I.P.
Mm-hmm.
But his art in this particular story has been really solid, like really good. Like he has definitely reached a new level as an artist, and specifically a Batman artist, I think, because I don't have anything but good things to say about the art in this particular story.
Yeah, if we could just get Tony Daniel 2018 to go back in time just a little bit and draw Batman R.I.P. Because, like, I don't think the art in Batman R.I.P. is atrocious. I don't think it's bad, honestly. I think there are pages when Batman comes out of that grave, it looks awesome. But there are other pages that are not so good.
Also, I should note that Booster Gold does watch Punisher Batman shoot himself in this. And then at the end of the issue, he sees blood on his little goggles that he can't get off. That's not really there. And that's pretty fucked up.
Oh, man. We're going to look back on Tom King's Batman run as the weirdest Batman run since, like, Alan Grant in 1989.
I mean, we're going to be like, remember when Batman and Catwoman got married for a minute?
Yeah, remember when Batman and Catwoman got married and Booster Gold made, like, stop Batman's parents from getting murdered, but then had to go back and make sure Batman's parents got murdered? Remember that story where there's a dude named Gotham who had Superman powers because he made a deal with the devil or whatever
happened? Remember how there was a war of jokes and riddles?
Remember when we got Kite Man's origin and it was real sad, but it was hilarious?
Remember when Batman surfed that plane?
Oh, he did surf that plane. I love that shit.
That shit was great.
Remember when Batman put together a Suicide Squad and went to go fight Naked Bane?
Boy, oh boy.
Wild.
All right. That's going to do it for our comics review segment. Now, Chris, it's time to talk to a pal. It's time to talk to Derek Charm.
Matt, it's been time to talk to a pal for me.
We're definitely talking to pals now. But now we're adding in pal number three, Derek Charm.
Joining us for the program this week, we are pleased to welcome back a good friend of the show. Actually, Derek, you've been on the show before, right? Because you've talked about Trip Fantastic. Ago.
Right. It's like probably 2 or 3 years ago.
It was a while.
If not longer,
it was a while back. But you know what? We're glad we finally got you. You know his work from The Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, from Jughead, from Star Wars Adventures, from the aforementioned Trip Fantastic, a classic in our eyes. Derek Charm is here. Derek, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much.
For fear of making everybody feel bad, you actually last appeared on the show, Derek, in 2013.
That's a really long time ago.
I think that's where you told us that you really loved drawing Trip Fantastic and coloring it. Because you got to use as much hot pink as you wanted, which they did not let you do in your day job of
doing licensing. That's right. I still overuse pink for that reason.
Oh, it's so good, though. It's so good.
Thank you.
So, Derek, you have now followed Erica Henderson on two pretty high-profile projects. Erica Henderson, friend of the show. Yes.
Yes. Sorry.
Okay.
I thought there was more coming.
No, there is. I was just giving you a pause to confirm.
Confirmed.
I remember reading an interview with Eric Larson when he was doing that new Supreme book, and people asked him if he was nervous about, like, you know, living up to what Alan Moore had done on it. And he said, yeah, I'm not worried about it at all. I followed Todd McFarlane on Spider-Man twice. Right. And I've been thinking about that because Todd McFarlane did not have "By Todd, we love you" on the cover of his last issue of Spider-Man.
I know. It was, yeah. I didn't even think about, like, before I started, I was like, oh yeah, I followed a book from Erica before, and it was all, like, fine. But yeah, there's a whole lot of love for Erica in the Skrull Girl, like, fan base, which is awesome, but was intimidating. Luckily, I didn't notice that until it was actually about to come out, so.
So was it a weirder experience than getting on Jughead?
I think so. I think just mostly because so much of Skrull Girl and that world and all those characters are so defined by Erica. Like, we'd seen Jughead in different styles before, so that was sort of less intimidating. And she wasn't on it for 35 issues. So it did feel like a lot more to jump into with this.
So what's your approach? Because I read your first issue and I loved it. If anyone out there has not read it, it came out in a week when we were doing other things here on War Rocket Ajax. But it is about Squirrel Girl trying to make sure that Kraven the Hunter is a good guy and not a villain. So she takes him to an escape room to have some fun times.
Which is how it was described to me when they asked if I wanted to jump on. I was like, yes, that sounds amazing. Yeah.
No, it's fantastic. It is. It's trip fantastic, even. It's great, but I wondered, like, you know, like you said, that is a book that has been largely defined by Ryan and Erica as a team, in the way that, like, you know, there were good Thor stories before Walt Simonson, but he's kind of the guy who defined the book.
Right.
And for you to come in on that, like, what did you, were you like, hey, I need to do something completely different? Were, because, you know, it's very clearly your style and it's awesome, but I'm curious as to your approach on that.
I sort of treated it the same way as when I came on a Jughead, and I was like, it would be weird for me to, I could probably do a passable impression of Erica's style, but it would be very surface level. And I think that her compositions and stuff are really interesting and, like, definitely recognizable as her. So that would be weird if I just, like, tried to do some, like, zombie copy of her work. So I just, like, treated it like with Jughead, and just, like, I have to do my own version of these characters, or at least something closer to what I'm familiar with drawing or comfortable with drawing.
Well, that makes me wonder, you know, when you come on a book like this, you're obviously making a fresh start coming on a book for the first time. It would seem like it would make sense for the writer to also kind of look at it as a refresh of sorts. So, I mean, are you talking to Ryan North and saying, like, yeah, you had Henderson before, but now, buddy, you got Charm.
Well,
and you got to do something different because I have a different style.
I mean, not really. Ryan actually asked me to come on the book since we've worked together on Jughead. And so, I mean, and also this happened very quickly. I think it was with kind of short notice. So there wasn't a lot. I think this was going to happen whether I was the artist or not. So he does check in and he's like, what do you want to draw? With Jughead, I said Reggie, which is why half that book is about Reggie.
Oh, we're going to talk about that.
And yeah, so like he does check in. We do talk. And everyone on the team made sure that I was like really comfortable with the characters. If I got something like way wrong, which I kind of did at first, they were like real nice about explaining it. They really care about the quality and consistency of the book, which is kind of cool.
Okay, you mentioned Reggie in Jughead. You drew the issue where Archie and Jughead encounter the Mantle family reunion, which is, you know me, I am an Archie guy. That is a full-on nightmare scenario for me.
Yeah. I mean, for me, that was like the best thing I've ever read. I was like, yes.
So, what is it about Reggie that made you want to draw him?
Basically just that he's a jerk. And I mean, that kind of goes back to Trip Fantastic. Like, I like characters that are jerks. I think they're funny, or like bully humor. So like, it was kind of great that was Chip's issue that with Reggie with the Mantle reunion. But it was amazing that was in there. I loved it.
Yeah, that was a truly phenomenal issue. Cause the great thing about it was you got to do the Reggie Mantle family reunion, which is a genuinely, like, an inherently hilarious Archie Comics premise. Mm-hmm. But you also got to do, like, really, like, there's a lot of really good emotional moments in there that I think maybe people weren't expecting from Chip, certainly. But to also have them show up in this very Reggie-centric story was a very welcome surprise for me, as, you know, as someone who loves the Archie characters.
Oh yeah, thank you. That was my first issue on the book. And I remember everyone saying, this book's not funny anymore, this new artist sucks. But I was like, no, it's supposed to be a little more serious. But, and that's kind of, I don't want to like spoil too much, that's kind of where this new Squirrel Girl is headed to. So I'm like, this is same thing all over again.
Is that, I mean, you have a, you know, you're also working on Star Wars, so you have this you know, currently ongoing history of working on these characters that people have an extreme attachment to. You know, I don't know if Squirrel Girl is yet on the level of a Jughead or a Star War, but certainly like among the Squirrel Girl readership, like it is a very dedicated fan base for that book.
Oh yeah, for sure. And they're all super nice. Like I've gotten emails ever since it was announced I was taking over and like messages, and it's like the most positive like coming on a book experience I've ever had. So it's awesome.
What's the, have you gotten any like fan interaction from Star Wars stuff?
Not a ton. Like just people asking for original art, which I work digital, so it doesn't really count. But yeah, not a ton of people. People are pretty cool with it being its own style and its own kind of thing.
Yeah. Cause you were doing you're doing Star Wars Adventures.
Right.
Which is the younger reader's Star Wars book.
Right.
And the stuff looks fantastic. I can't stop saying fantastic now that you're here. And I don't mean it to be a weird thing, but I can't.
That could be my, like, catchword, buzzword.
Are those Star Wars aliens as annoying to draw as I think they are?
No, I actually loved it. So I came on that book right after Jughead ended. And I was like, I mean, that was like 10 issues of drawing basically like white teens. So like it was awesome to get to do some monsters and robots and spaceships and all kinds of stuff. So I was totally into it. And also Lucasfilm was like, go crazy with the colors. Don't worry about likenesses to the actors. And I was like, this is amazing. So
that's for them to be like, yeah, don't worry about likenesses. That's pretty great.
I know. And I think it's very specific to the book we work on, or the kids book. But yeah, they're really awesome about it. They seem like really supportive about artists and like understand that things can look different in different mediums.
If you're not getting the like worried about getting the likeness down, what do you do to like? What do you look at to make the characters distinctive when it's like, you know, a Star Wars?
Yeah, I mean, I try to treat them like just a character, like you know, like you would draw Batman, or like they have their own qualities. I kind of try to do this with Star Trek too. But a little less because they do want it to look like the actors. But yeah, like with the Han Solo stuff we're doing now, they said they didn't want it to look like Harrison Ford or the new actor. So they're like, come up with something that is just Han Solo that's separate from these actors, which was kind of awesome. So we just made our own design for that.
Do you just kind of like boil it down to the hair?
Sort of. He's got, I mean, I feel like there's like certain features, like certain way you carry yourself. Obviously the clothes help a lot.
Well, yes.
And yeah, and they're like, they said like you can make it as stylized as you want, like it could just be, as long as they, I don't know, it kind of, the acting in the comic is kind of what sells it, I think.
If you get the attitude down on a lot of these characters, you're at least, you know, 80% of the way there.
Right.
And the other 20% is of course the Corellian blood stripe.
Right.
The stripe on his pants that has an origin story, because that's how Star Wars works.
I love it.
That kind of brings me to something that was in this latest issue of Squirrel Girl that I wanted to talk about. Mm-hmm. What was the direction for Casual Craven?
There was no, it just said that he was wearing his street clothes and there wasn't really, he kind of left it up to me and I was like, should I treat this as a joke and dress him terribly? Or should I like, I felt like there was some kind of like respect in the script for Craven that he's not a joke. So I was like trying to make it like funny, but also like kind of stylish. I based his outfit on the actor who plays Aquaman, what he wore to the Justice League premiere.
Jason Momoa.
Yeah, without the
just kind of perfect. Shirts,
thank you. But pretty much the same outfit.
That's, Derek, I got to say, that's amazing. Because I saw it and I didn't think, oh, this looks like a joke, you know? I just thought, oh, that's what Kraven wears.
Right. Well, that's awesome.
And Matt and I were talking before we started recording about Kraven and whether or not he is the biggest weirdo that Spider-Man fights. Because he's a weird dude.
I feel there's a lot of weirdos that Spider-Man fights.
That was exactly what Matt said.
Yeah, I mean, it's a deep well of weirdos, yeah. Is what it is.
Animal-themed weirdos.
What affects your approach to Kraven? Because he's this guy specifically, and it's, you know, he's someone that I've seen you draw recently, but also he's a character that I think we both find incredibly fascinating. Because he's a guy who is a professional hunter of men?
Right.
But also he has had the wildest outfit since 1963. But he's also occasionally a dude who will dress as Spider-Man and eat a room full of spiders and bury himself and then, like, climb out of his own grave. There's a lot going on with him.
Right, and then not reference that or just go back to his regular thing right after.
and sometimes he will die and then come back to life and then hang out with Squirrel.
Right, right. And it's kind of funny because, like, Ryan treats that stuff all as it did happen. And so it's like, these little, like, weird things will just be dropped into the middle of a conversation.
Well, there's this explicit bit in this issue about Squirrel Girl talking about Kraven and how when he hangs out with her, he's, like, a pretty decent dude.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, yeah, I don't know if he's like that around other people. And he's absolutely not, like, no, historically speaking.
Right. I think that's part of the character of Squirrel Girl, though, is that it's like she brings out the best side of people.
Mm-hmm.
Like with like Galactus or any other of the villains that have been in the comic before. So I feel like that's like pretty in keeping with her character, which I think is unique about the book, because the whole vibe of the book is like sort of nonviolent solutions to problems, which is kind of cool.
Well, that kind of makes it the opposite of the stuff that you said you like. Like Squirrel Girl has no jerks.
I know. But that's nice. I mean, it's I don't know. It's kind of refreshing, I think, right now, especially that it's such a positive book. And Ryan's such a positive person. So it's like, it's really fun. It makes me smile working on it.
How fun was it to get to draw Brain Drain?
He is my favorite person to draw. And he's also in a tux. And
he sure
from
is.
Here on out, because they're all still the same outfits. And I love it. It's so good.
He's got that big old top hat.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually going to ask about that because it's always funny to see like what you can tell an artist wants to draw. And I had a real question about whether you like drawing Brain Drain or not, because he does completely cover his weird robot body.
Well, that was in the script. Issue. That was him misunderstanding what casual attire is.
I mean, that's pretty good.
It's pretty good. Yeah. But I love drawing him. I always, like, 3 issues in now, every time he's speaking, I just face him directly at the panel, at the camera. It's like the most, just standing there with dead arms. It's the best thing.
So, of the stuff you're doing right now, obviously, you know, it's Squirrel Girl, but you're also still doing Star Wars.
Mm-hmm. Star Wars has a rotating art team, so it's also short, like 12-page stories, so that can kind of keep going.
And you just recently, it wasn't that long ago that you did Starfleet Academy, too.
Yeah, that was like maybe a 2 years ago, probably.
Okay, well, it's longer ago than I thought. I remember emailing you about it because I really liked the design of one of the ships.
Yeah, yeah. I loved working on that book. It was super fun.
Is it any jarring at all to kind of shift gears and go back and forth between those projects? Because they're, you know, they're very different.
I don't know. I like the variety because when you're like just doing 20 pages a month and like, or like 32 pages, if you throw in Star Wars Adventures, it's nice to have a completely different like environment and world and tone to be able to draw. And then I can like get into those moods while I'm working on it, and it keeps it fresh. So the same when I was doing Valiant High, I was working on Jughead at the same time. And that, those were like really similar books, but at least like Valiant High had some superhero stuff in it. So
I'm glad you brought up Valiant High, because I love Valiant High. And everyone should be reading it. It was originally released digitally, and it's out. It's coming out in print now. So yeah, people this prefer paper comics.
Full of comics that I drew coming out. But
yeah, Derek Charm, a 2018 superstar, 2018's everywhere artist.
Well, Valiant High is cheating because I drew that a year ago, but it is coming out. I think next week or the week after.
That is such a good book. It's got the line, "I'm going to she's all that you," which I loved.
Yeah. I laughed out loud reading those scripts from Daniel Kittlesmith. It was a really fun book to work on. And also, I don't know the Valiant characters that well, so it was kind of treating them all as new characters.
I mean, I think that's the thing that, like, you know, doing Star Wars without doing the likenesses, it has its own challenge in that you have to take these characters, some of whom have essentially been around in the same essential costume since, you know, what, 1993? Like, Exo Manowar is basically wearing the same stuff, and figure out how to translate that to a high school. And that's fascinating to me. I love that stuff. I love high school AUs in general are my jam.
Yeah, I really loved redesigning those superhero outfits as, like, casual high school clothes. I guess that's kind of what Kraven was, too, just putting these crazy outfits and just keeping the, like, main aesthetic of them and putting them into regular clothes.
Was there any direction on that? Like that, Colin King should show up wearing a tailored suit?
Yeah, Daniel sent over these like brief descriptions of every character and kind of the kind of person they are and what they might be wearing. With that one, he did definitely say the suit. He's always in a suit.
He's a ninja with a K.
Yeah.
Those ideas of taking these characters and putting them into costumes that still kind of capture their essence. Is there any character that you haven't done that with that you would like to take a swing at?
Not off the top of my head. I don't know. Right now I'm really having fun just drawing like Marvel Universe shit. So like, you know, like superheroes and supervillains and stuff. So every time someone's in street clothes, I'm like, change into your superhero clothes. So that's where I am right now.
Well, talking about Marvel Universe shit, I've been thinking about this ever since you said it, because Squirrel Girl kind of casts a surprisingly wide Marvel Universe net.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Squirrel Girl doesn't really stay in just her corner of the Marvel Universe. She sort of has free reign to go anywhere and everywhere in the Marvel Universe. It's something that's particularly cool about that character. So When Ryan says, "Hey, what do you want to draw?" It kind of feels like you've got a lot of choices, a lot of options when you answer that question. So I wonder what, you know, how you answered that question the first time around, if you can reveal that.
I mean, I can't reveal it yet specifically, but I did make a huge list because he sent this email and I was like, oh my God, everything. I was like, Generation X or like the weirdest, dumbest things, you know? But I made a list. I was like, okay, what do I actually want to draw? Like, what would be actually really awesome? And so I sent him a couple, like, completely separate. I'm not even sure how anything's going to work, but random ideas over. So
please tell me more about, like, okay, you don't have to tell me if you're going to draw Generation X. Mm-hmm. But I do want to know which members of Generation X you want to draw most.
The original team. I love those red costumes. I was literally just reading this. I got Marvel Unlimited because I've been catching up on my Marvel stuff. And that was like the first thing I went back to.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I like them too.
Yeah, X-Men 92 comic had them in the red suits, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We put the Ecstatics in them too, which we thought was hilarious.
That was awesome,
and I don't think other people thought was as
hilarious
as we did. So we're talking Monet. We're talking Chamber. We're talking Goops with her red costume and her jacket.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Husk is who I'm thinking of. Skin was also there.
Right, Husk was the one. Oh, she pulls off her skin and has other skin underneath.
Yeah, right. Paige Guthrie.
Right.
A truly horrifying superpower.
I think it's so good. It's such a smart idea.
You're leaving out Sync.
Mm-hmm. I am leaving out Sync.
Who has a big rainbow around him at all times. It all looks like a rave flyer. It's amazing.
And that very good boy, Chamber.
And Chamber.
Talk about Jono?
Jono. It was disgusting. All those close-up panels of his, like, frayed nose coming out over his fire mouth.
It's, okay, it's really weird that they did a hot teen with no lower face, right?
It's kind of amazing.
It's perfect in its own way. Was there anything else that you... Because after the last few years worth of comics, like, you know, Jughead, Valiant High, Starfleet Academy, Squirrel Girl is not, you know, about teens, but it is about college students. It's about young people. I think you're getting a reputation as a guy who does really, really great comics about younger characters. But I'm wondering, like, if somebody was like, hey, Derek, do you want to draw the Celestials? Like, the furthest things you can get from teens, would you be up for it?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I kind of naturally draw, like, a younger, like, body type, younger characters, but I totally, like, that's what the thing about Star Wars is, that it's completely separate from that, so I would love to draw the Celestials, or any crazy giant characters.
Let me tell you, teen Celestials, that's our new pitch.
Okay. As long as they're giants and have monster, like, circuitry faces, then okay.
No, they are exactly, they look exactly like the Jack Kirby Celestials. They just act like teens.
Perfect.
I think we can pitch it. Okay. I think we can do it.
Celestial High?
Oh, it would be very good. Is there anything that you have coming up in the future besides the stuff that you're already working on that you can talk about?
Just more of the stuff that I'm currently working on. There's some more Star Wars stuff coming up. And Squirrel Girl, like, pretty much for the foreseeable future. So,
well, that leads me to the question that you know I have to ask, mm-hmm. as the longtime Derek Charm fan that I am. Are we going to get more Trip Fantastic?
I mean, I don't know. I look back at that stuff now. I know it was, 5 years ago? Five years ago, if not more.
I think it was more than that. It was a while, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't even look like I drew it to me anymore. I can't imagine going back to it. I would want to redo the whole thing if we did. Me and Jason obviously talk about it. Jason Baxter, who wrote it. But we'll see. I kind of doubt it. Also because comics is my job now. So, and that was a comic that we did for fun. So it's kind of hard to want to do a comic for fun when it's your job.
Yeah. It very much is difficult.
So, you know.
Like, is there any chance that we could... Because it's not available on Comixology currently, right?
Not now. It was for a while. But it kind of was like, we're not... We have an issue that's not finished, so we should probably take it down.
I'm telling you, the unfinished, the incomplete Trip Fantastic.
Yeah, someday.
With commentary. I would absolutely read it. I would read it again. I've read it already.
Well, yeah, we'll do a remastered version where I redraw it all.
See, that's that Star Wars talking.
I know. There's value there.
Well, you were doing your own colors on Trip Fantastic, right?
Right.
That is what afforded you to be able to use all that hot pink. You know, obviously you're working with very talented colorists on the work you're doing now. But do you ever see those colors and say, like, that could be pink, that could be pink, that could be pink?
Because I colored all of Jughead and I colored almost all of Star Wars. Matt Herms helped me out on Jughead for a few issues too. And he has a style that's pretty similar to my own. And he has, like, colors he chooses that are pretty similar. But like Valiant High was, I believe it was David Barron. And then Rico Renzi, obviously, for Squirrel Girl. And it is, at first I was like, oh, like that's not what I was thinking when I drew it. But that book looks amazing to me. And I'm, like, completely blown away by all the color choices Rico makes. And it looks like a Marvel comic to me. I love the flat colors that he chooses, like the blue sky, things that I just wouldn't even think of. So it's fun, but at first it is a little weird because you have your own ideas about what you think.
I feel like if there's any colorist in the game who you're gonna say, hey, this could use more hot pink, and he would go, I'm thinking the exact same thing, it would be Rico Renzi.
Yeah, he's great. He's awesome. And there's a palette for Squirrel Girl that I wouldn't have chosen, but it makes it look like a Squirrel Girl comic. Like, it didn't look real until it was colored.
His color choices for Craven's Street Clothes are so solidly right on the mark.
Oh, they're perfect. Like, yeah, I was really
into that. Those gray jeans. You gotta have those gray jeans.
The brown shoes.
I feel personally attacked as someone who was with Matt Wilson wearing gray jeans not too long ago.
You gotta do the whole look.
They look good, baby. You know I love those gray jeans. Now, the Kraven had previously appeared.
Yes.
Did you redraw the the amazing side art of the Kraven?
I did. At first, I was like, can we just slap theirs on there? Because I think it was Joe Quinones and Erica who did the original one. And they're like,
beautiful.
They're like, we want to see yours. And I was like, okay. So I spent way too much time recreating it and slapped it on the side.
It is. It's beautiful.
It's good. You did a good job.
Oh, thank you.
I don't know how it took this long for the Kraven to happen, but it's extremely good.
It is extremely good.
All right. Well, Derek, with that, now that we know that you're putting your own spin on the Kraven.
Barely.
I think it's time for us to kick it over to our friends on Twitter to see if they have any questions, okay, automotive or otherwise, for you. Matt, if the people want to get in on these conversations that we have with our pals every week here on Warrock at Ajax, how exactly can they go about that?
Well, Chris, it's such an easy process. Step one in the process is get a van. Go down to your local van dealership and say, I want one. And then they'll sell one to you. Then you take it to your local airbrush enthusiast. Get them to put something sweet on the side of that van. Something that's your personality. Something that shows you in all your glory and power. And you could call it the whatever your name is van. Then you have a van. Then, once you do that, sign up for an account on twitter.com. Follow the Matt D. Wilson, that's me, the ISB, that's Chris, and wait in your van until Thursday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 6:30 Pacific Time. And one of us will put out the call for questions for the guest we are interviewing. And you might have your question asked on the show, just like the ones I'm about to ask Derek Charm right now. And we're going to start with a question from Vic Perfecto on Twitter.
Okay.
Who says, in the wake of Riverdale's success, Derek, do you feel like an architect for the rise of a handsome and dateable Jughead?
Well, I don't know. I actually didn't watch Riverdale until I finished Jughead, because I had enough of those kids while I was working on it. But I do like that show now that I can watch it. I don't know. Maybe. He wasn't dateable in our book.
That is true. That is very true. I believe Vic is making our term for that kind of Jughead PG.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have referred to a Jughead like that in the past as a fuckable Jughead.
Right. Specifically, Chip said...
I listened to that one. I remember that.
Yeah. He's like, if you don't think there's going to be a fuckable Jughead on that show, you are wrong.
And so it was.
He was
so correct. It was. Yeah, I guess it's more of a handsome Jughead.
I'll say yes.
Beautiful Jughead.
Okay. I choose to say yes.
Yes, but always choose to say yes.
I feel like your Jughead's facial expressions... like really do have that that Cole Sprouse intensity to them.
Oh, thank you. There's a picture that he took in front of that cover where Jughead has the two fingers up, and I was like, that is pretty cool. They have the same haircut and everything.
I do think, like, I think about that image of sunglasses Jughead, and I'm just like, yeah, that's like. That's like cool, handsome Jughead. That's the guy.
CHJ.
CHJ, man. All right, here's a question from Ben Rowe on Twitter. He says, depictions of Squirrel Girl by artists in books other than Squirrel Girl's own book seem to have had a hard time resembling the way Doreen was depicted in the main Squirrel Girl series. She tended to look pretty different.
What do you think is the key to getting her look right?
I mean, that's one that I'm still, I feel like my Squirrel Girl is, because I, this book happened really fast, so I was kind of designing on the page, but she keeps changing. I think by issue three, my third issue, I'm pretty comfortable with how I'm drawing her, but I think it's about keeping some innocence to her. I know that Erica and Ryan based her physically on this female bodybuilder whose name I'm forgetting right now.
So, the one with the pixie cut, the kind of short one.
You're right.
Basically
like Squirrel Girl.
Yeah, so, I did not know that, but that makes perfect sense.
So trying to keep her, like, what are the words I'm looking for? Like, physically fit, but kind of thick in a good way. I don't know. It is a challenge. It's something that I'm working on. So,
by the way, Ben's Twitter name is Cineast Big Ben Rowe, if you were wondering about his Twitter name. Xavier Files has a question that is... Maybe crosses a line. You can answer this however you wish. Xavier Files asks, are you a vampire who sustains himself on Erica Henderson's life force?
Yes.
Fair enough. I mean, look, people. Matt Fraction was calling me huge, white huge, like three episodes after I came on this show, so... I know what it's like. I know what it's like to follow.
It's okay. I don't mind. I think it's great. Like, when they asked me to be on this book, I laughed. I was like, that's amazing. That was my thing.
What's great is that that metaphor pretty much assures that Derek's going to be on Squirrel Girl for the next 18 years.
I'm taking over her creator-owned comic. I'm just waiting for her to get tired.
Look, we'd never finish Subatomic Party Girls if you're looking for more work.
Mike _ Donacci on Twitter has this question. How many rhyming superheroes can you think of or create or fit into a galaxy-spanning adventure?
Rhyming superheroes. In what way?
That's right. I guess their names rhyme.
We've got Squirrel Girl, Koi Boy, Chipmunk Honk. So that's three.
Brain Drain?
Yeah.
Brain Drain?
Yeah.
Are there more? I know there are.
Rhyming superheroes. You'd think they would come to mind easily. Mm-hmm. But they do not.
I can think of a litter of superheroes.
Oh, there are a lot of those. It feels like making their names rhyme has to be an extremely deliberate choice.
Right.
It's not something you could just accidentally do unless you create, like, Soup Can Man. Soup Can Man, copyright Matt Wilson, 2018, do not steal.
Soup Can Man's pretty good.
I like it. I guess the answer is seven, then.
Here's a question from Asimov _ Fangirl on Twitter, who asks, if you could team up Jughead with any character or team, I guess inside the Archie world or not, inside Riverdale or not, who would you choose?
Actually, they're doing a Archie meets Batman 66 book that's coming out in the next few months that I did a cover for. That was so awesome. And I had like nothing but ideas of Jughead with various Batman 66 characters. I feel like that's probably what I would choose, even though it does exist.
It's got to be, you got to have Jughead with Egghead, right?
Oh, you that's gotta. Smart.
They're both food guys with heads in their name.
Yes, correct.
God.
And well, if you go in TV continuity, they're both kind of like too smart for their own good.
That's true.
Yeah, troublemakers. Egghead's not really a bad guy.
I mean, he is kind of bad. He does try to murder Batman and Robin on several occasions.
Egghead's just asking questions, man.
Just asking questions about that dinosaur egg that he wants to hatch.
And then it does, and he's not that surprised.
Oh, a great villain.
All right, now it is time for the part of Twitter questions that I like to call Character Corner. This is where Twitter accounts of fictional characters ask questions of our guest. And we're going to start with Real Kunzite, who has been very vocal in Character Corner lately, who has two questions for you, Derek. First is Squirrel Girl a magical princess?
No. Unless she's... Is she an inhuman now? Is that the idea? She's not a mutant anymore, correct?
She is an indeterminate origin.
Okay, okay. Well, I'm going to have to say no until proven otherwise. I don't think she's magic.
I believe the specific line was that she is similar to but legally distinct from a mutant.
Okay, perfect.
Which I saw people getting mad about that, and that's when I knew online was bad.
Yeah, that is the perfect joke for that book.
Yes.
The next question from Real Kunzite is she good at skiing?
Yes, because that tail would help balance her.
That's right. She could adjust the tail mm-hmm. if she was going off balance. She could do a slalom. I think she could do a lot of things.
Right.
Here's one from Stone Cold HCC, an account that exists only to ask questions on Warrock and Ajax. Stone Cold is looking for some personal advice. Uh-huh. And I'll do the voice this time. Which one should I do when I die? Cremation or full King Tut mummy?
King Tut mummy. For him specifically.
Yeah. Yeah. Get in that sarcophagus, mm-hmm. buddy.
Oh boy. That was that one got me. That one really got me.
Here's one last character corner question. This is from JJJ Bugle News, J. Jonah Jameson on Twitter, who wrote this like a telegram.
Okay.
Mr. Charm, how do you stand for that burger-chomping madman known as Forsyth Pendleton Jughead Jones III?
How do I stand for him?
How do you stand for him?
I stand proud. I don't know how to answer that. I think he's a good character.
I never knew J. Jonah Jameson had a thing against
Jughead. I didn't either. I thought that would be something he'd be fine with. Normal teenagers.
I mean, in retrospect, that does make sense. Jughead on TV is a rival newspaper man.
Mm. Mm. That's true. Maybe, like, J. Jonah Jameson thinks there's something going on with all the burgers he's eating, where he thinks they're, like, drugs.
That could be a crossover, a team-up.
That could be a team-up. Now I'm just thinking mm-hmm. about it.
We get Soup Can yeah, Man in there.
Copyright me, do not steal. This last one is from Coltreg on Twitter.
Okay.
Luke, who brought us up to the Columbus Podcast Festival last week, Luke asks, Derek Charm, how do you get to be so
charming? I knew it. Great question. Actually, every review, everything says, makes a joke about that.
I'm not going to lie. We were saying it before you got here.
Look, be glad your name's not Derek Butthole, you know?
I mean, that's why I had to change it.
Okay.
Our guest has been Derek Charm. Derek, before we let you get out of here,
yes.
Can you tell everyone where they can find you if you wish to be mm-hmm. found?
I'm on Twitter. Derek_Charm. And all the other websites, Derek Charm. I'm still on Tumblr. I don't think anyone else is.
I'm on Tumblr.
It's a good substitute for a portfolio site. I see you post on there, actually.
Yeah. You on IRS.gov?
I am, yeah. Derek Charm. Actually, that one's not under Derek Charm.
Let's see. You on YouTube?
No. Yes, but okay. It's private.
Oh, all right. So you're out there, but don't go looking.
Don't go looking.
Give Derek his
privacy. Yeah. Just pick one, follow it.
And of course, you've got Unbeatable Score Girl. Your first issue is out with many, many more to come that are fantastic. You've got Starfleet Academy out from IDW. You've got Star Wars Adventures out from IDW. You've got Valiant High coming out in print now and entirely available digitally and well worth a read. Honestly, one of my favorite things Valiant's ever done. I feel like there's more.
There's probably more.
Jughead. You got Jughead. That's right? Good.
That still exists. Eisner Award winning Jughead.
Yeah. It's that good stuff. Derek Charm, thank you so much for joining us. You are a delight to have around.
Thank you. It's really nice to talk to you guys after so long.
Thanks once again to Derek Charm for joining us for the interview segment. You should get everything he does because he's great. And wonderfully talented. But now it is time for us to answer some questions. It is our listener question segment, Matt.
That's right. And we have a couple questions submitted to us on Tumblr from Allison Coffee. The first one is easy to answer. It is the Adventures of Superman anthology series worth picking up? Absolutely yes.
Yes.
With the exception of one story. And you can figure out what story that is.
Probably. There's a hard no on one, but everything else is absolutely worth picking up.
Yeah. It's pretty much across the board good, with one glaring exception of a story.
Very glaring exception.
The other question from Allison Coffey is a little more, we got to think about it a little more.
Okay.
They say, the last few months, I have felt a bit down and unenthusiastic about comics, but I'm reading the 2017 Claws special right now on your recommendation, and it's so good, it's making me feel really excited to read more comics. Have either of us had similar experiences where we're really out of it and one good issue drags us back in?
Yeah, like literally all the time.
Yeah, it happens literally all the time. I could tell you specifically what one issue was that kind of, after reading comics in a sort of perfunctory way, I had been doing it for a while, because I never really stop. Mm-hmm. We have to read them for this show.
We got
to
read three a week.
Yeah, we got to read at
Sometimes
least three a week.
Sometimes we don't.
The one that pulled me in last year, after having kind of a down period, and this is Buck Wild. It's the fucking Batman Elmer Fudd comic.
Hey, remember when Tom King was writing Batman, and then he wrote a Batman Elmer Fudd crossover?
Yeah.
That's a thing we're going to be saying in like 2 years.
That comic is great. That comic should be the most forgettable thing, right?
Yes.
But I will never forget that comic.
Yeah. It's I have to read comics for work, which is, I'm not going to lie and say that it's like writing comics and writing about comics is not great, because it is. But it is the thing that I like to do for fun is the thing that I have to do so that I can eat. And that makes it a real pain to get through sometimes. But yeah, every time I start thinking about comics and I'm like, man, remember when the Masters of Evil fought the Avengers and they came to Avengers Mansion and Songbird tore up Captain America's only photo of his mother? That shit was good. And then she became an Avenger. Songbird became an Avenger after that, and she talked to Captain America about it.
Yeah.
She was like, hey, sorry, that was a real dick move on my part. Yeah, comics are great. And they can get boring and they can get repetitive, and you can get tired of them. And honestly, that's a thing that I really love about books like Squirrel Girl. You know, we were talking about Derek's first issue, and I think that scene where Squirrel Girl's like, yeah, I really like hanging out with Kraven, but his character can be pretty inconsistent when he's not hanging out with us. And I'm like, yeah, that is a frustration I have as a reader, that people don't get things right. But this issue where they're just going to hang out and go to the escape room, and Howard the Duck is also there before them, there's so much fun stuff to be had in those issues. And then you just read the ones, and they pay off, you know?
Yeah, and a lot of times for me, it's not even so much that I think comics are bad. I never think comics are bad,
right?
Even though we joke around about that on here all the time.
I mean, I think a lot of comics are bad.
I don't think comics on the whole are bad.
No, certainly not.
But I do get into these phases where I'm like, oh, I'm sure that's good, but I've read so many other things like it, you know, where I just kind of become, I don't know, somebody's been reading comics for 25 years. And it takes certain things like that Squirrel Girl stuff, or like Lock and Key, which I recently just devoured after having slept on it for way too long. But I devoured the whole series. in the span of a few weeks. It takes stuff like that to just kind of like light that fire back under me again and be like, no, comics are good. And also I need to keep up with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it doesn't have to be, it doesn't have to be a comic that came out recently. You know, it can be anything. It can be anything that just hits you right at the right time. There was a time when I honestly did not know if DC Comics was going to be around in 5 years. I was that down on DC Comics. That time has the 5 year time limit has now passed. DC Comics is doing great. There was a story about a bunch of weird Batman that came from the bottom of the reverse side of the map. That shit was tight. But there was a time when there just like wasn't anything there, seemingly. And you know what I did? I like got more into manga. Like I read more manga that year. Because I was grouchy about one thing, but something else was stepping up to fill the gap. Like I read a bunch of Hunter x Hunter and a bunch of One Piece and a bunch of Shotaro Ishinomori stuff that I'd never read. You know, I went back and reread the Zelda comic that Ishinomori did and the Super Mario comic. I am in a room surrounded on all sides by comic books, and there's gonna be something in here that I want to read every time I come in here. You know. Even if it's not something new, there's always going to be something. But yeah, that feeling, don't feel bad if you have that feeling, because it happens constantly.
And it happens to everybody.
Yeah. And the thing is, in the way that it only really takes like one good comic to get you back, it also definitely takes one bad comic to put you there.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, ride the roller coaster. Just don't fall off. Stay on. Stay on for this ride. And we'll all be okay.
Ride the roller coaster. Don't fall off. Matt Wilson.
Yeah, put that on an epigraph. I don't know. What kind of shit? Put it on a bookmark? Yeah, that's a thing with an epigraph on it, right? All right.
Sure, why not?
That's going to do it for our listener question segment. Thank you for sending that one in, Allison Coffey. And that's going to do it for this episode of War Rocket Ajax.
That's right, Matt. Before we get out of here, let's tell the people where they can find us.
You can send us listener questions, like the ones you just heard, on our Tumblr, which is warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com. You can also send listener questions to our email address, which is warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. That is also where you can send every story ever lists, panel president lists. If you want to sponsor the show, you can let us know there. Or, you know, if you just want to drop us a line about something else. All that can happen at that email address. Go to our website, which is warrocketajax.com. That's where you can find the every story ever and panel president lists. It's also where you can stream the show, download the show, read show notes, and leave comments. Be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcasting app you choose to use. The more positive reviews we get on those places, the more we are featured. Now, Chris, we're going to tell everybody individually where they can find us online. For me, all you have to do is go to mattdwilson.net to find links to all my stuff, my books, my other podcasts, my comics, and all my social medias. Are right there. Chris, where can people find your stuff?
They can head on over to the-isb.com. That's got a link to all the comics that I write, all the podcasts that I do, all the things that I write on the internet. I think the Dark Hawk Infinity Countdown miniseries is coming out, if not this week, next week. It's me and Chad coming back to Dark Hawk with Gang Hyuk Lim, who's an amazing artist out of Korea, to do the next chapter in Chris Powell's life as he heads out to space to fight the Raptor cultists that were showing up in Guardians of the Galaxy for a while. So please give that a read. It's super fun for us to write, and will give you some good Dark Hawk feelings, which I have all the time. Matt, before we leave, we do have a good cause of the week. We were actually asked about this on Tumblr not too long ago. And we do want to come out and say, yes, we definitely support the teachers that all over the country are trying to get better wages, better classroom conditions, just better public education in general.
If you don't know this about us, Chris and I are both the children of teachers.
Yeah, both of our moms were teachers, right?
Yeah.
And Aiden's mom as well. Public education is very important to us as people. I don't think we would, you know, we would be writers if not for that. So if your local teachers are trying to improve conditions in their schools, we highly suggest that you support them. Here in North Carolina, our local nonprofit for helping teachers is Red for Ed NC. It's R-E-D, the number 4-E-D-N-C. They had a huge march on Raleigh last week, the state capital, where 20,000 people showed up, including a ton of teachers who were taking a sick day in order to get that message out there. There's also, of course, the teachers that were in West Virginia, teachers in plenty of other places. So if that's going on in your community, see if you can help out, join in. That's something I think we can all get on the same page with. If that's not happening in your community, congratulations. That's awesome. But chances are good that you could probably do some good helping out schools in one way or another. So check that out locally.
And with that, Chris, did we create high quality content on this episode of War Rocket Ajax, despite my being at less than 100% from the illness brought on to me by, let's say, overstimulation, overexertion on a lengthy road trip? You know, even with this malady, my hope is to bring HQC to everybody. And I just hope we did it, you know?
Matt, here's what I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you what we told so many, what we told each other so many times. The content is good.
The content is high quality. Yeah, everybody, it was HQC. You know it was. And we'll be back with some more next week.
Bye, everybody.
We love you.
Yeah! Flash.